Joyce, everybody.
Well, thank you, Mark. Yeah, I thought I was 37 years sober yesterday, and then I'm like, wait a minute, I'm 38 years sober. But that's what happens when you're getting old. Not that it's insignificant, but I don't know. Like, I know people that are sober a long, long, long time, and they're complete assholes. So I just go based on character. But I'm Joyce. I'm an alcoholic, and I didn't drink today. And really, that's all I have is today. Mark asked me to. I think this is the first time I've ever been recorded in AA. But so I'm ordained now. So this is something new. You know, there's always something new in Alcoholics Anonymous for me. And I know this is an AA. This is not traditional AA. But that's where my roots are. You know, I came in through traditional AA. And usually when how I was taught or what I learned when I come into Alcoholics Anonymous was, you know, you shared your experience, strength, and hope before, during, and after. And you talk about the threefold illness of alcoholism because it has different aspects to it. But I'm gonna be a free thinker today and try to step outside of my traditional box of how I usually talk. But I don't know. Like, I know some people say they were born an alcoholic. I did not come from an alcoholic family. My parents drank socially. But I gotta say, when my mother would go out and drink, like she would go to some church dance with my dad, I'm sure they whooped it up. And the next day she'd be on the couch all day, like in her pajamas, you know, and she was probably hungover. I think social drinkers can be hungover, you know, if they overindulge. But I know there's alcoholism in my family. I guess my grandfather, my mother's father, was an alcoholic. They say he died from hypothermia, but not hypothermia, from pneumonia. But what happened was he was drunk and they found him outside and he contracted pneumonia. So, but on his death certificate says pneumonia. So there's always like ways in and out of it, you know? But I have mental illness for sure. I have depression and I can always remember feeling. I can remember at a young age being an overthinker, an overfeeler, and at some point I realized I had depression, you know? So, you know, naturally, you put a drink of alcohol in my system, that's going to make me feel uplifted, right? But I come from a family of four. I'm the youngest. I'm kind of a second generation in my own family because my siblings were all older than I am. And so I always felt like I was being talked down to and always told what to do and how to do it. And I didn't have much of a voice in my family. So I wasn't expressive. And then when I was expressive, like maybe when I once in a while became brave enough to be expressive, I was kind of always shushed, you know, like what I had to say was not of relevance or of importance, you know. So I don't know. It's that, you know, like I didn't, you know, pa the parents back then, it didn't come with an instruction manual, you know. My dad married my mother because my mother was pregnant. So there you go. Already, you know, he's doing the obligatory. Whether they were in love with each other, who knows? They had a rumble in the back seat of a car one night, you know, and along comes my sister. And he stayed with the family through the entire marriage. But I gotta tell you, it wasn't a happy place to be because there was just a lot of arguing and a lot of fighting, and there wasn't a lot of display of love, of expressing your feelings and feeling safe. There was never a feeling of safety, trust, or of loving love. And it's just a really shitty environment to grow up in. So I, as a kid, I was a very free spirited kid. I used to love going out and play after school and be with my friends and be out in nature and look at the clouds and be out in the fields, running around, chasing butterflies. I was just that kind of a kid. I found interest in nature as a young kid. I wasn't afraid of it at all. And it was safe, because nothing, there was no feedback. So it was just my, it was kind of my safe place to be. But, anytime I would come back to the home after, and I was a fantasizer too. I fantasized a lot. I don't know if I had a, I never got diagnosed ADD, but I think I had it. I just was a big time fantasizer. I'd be in school and I'd be like in another world. And I didn't do very well as a student because I couldn't focus. And I didn't, I would read something and I wouldn't comprehend. Like I would understand something when I was reading it. But then if you had given me a comprehension test after reading something, I just couldn't do it, And I'm still that way today. I don't retain things in that way. I retain information through experiences and or some real hard studying, So it was really, it wasn't hard. It was very difficult for me to be in academia. But I also was brought up Roman Catholic and I went to parochial school. So everything in my life was always based on a right or wrong decision, like this is immoral and this is moral and like this is wrong and this is right and be good and don't be bad. And that was the scale in which I had to live by, So I learned at a very, very young age how to lie, manipulate, steal, play act, It was just easier to get along with everybody and not have conflict. Because I just didn't feel like I fit in anywhere. And I knew the difference between right or wrong. I knew stealing was wrong. I knew lying was wrong. But it saved my ass, from getting in trouble because I didn't want to get in trouble. Because my dad was, he did corporal punishment. Not all the time. It wasn't like a weekly thing, but it would build up, build up, build up, build up, and then he would blow a stack, And I never really got a lot of attention from my dad. So, and that's who you have your first love affair with as a little girl. You want to look up to your dad. You want his approval, you want his praise. And I didn't, it was nothing. I got nothing. Nothing. But I craved it. I craved it. So eventually I don't know, I must have been about 12 years old. I liked hanging around with the tougher kids, the rough kids. They were more fun, I guess. I don't know. They were more daring. And my girlfriend down the street stole some whiskey out of her parents' liquor cabinet and she had it in a jam jar. And she's like, come on over my house. And I'm like, all right, go over our house. We're sitting on her front porch. And she's drinking this brown substance out of this jam jar. And, she's telling me it's whiskey. And so I took a smell of it. And I was like, oh, couldn't stand the smell of it. But I saw her take a little sip. She goes, just take a sip. And I took a sip. And it tasted horrible. It tastes like turpentine. And like turpentine smells. And it burned the whole way down. And it was gross. It was gross. But then she took another sip. And then I took another sip. I held my nose this time. Because I used to take medicine as a kid and I used to hold my nose. So I knew if you held your nose, you wouldn't taste it. And then I started getting that warm, silly, giddy feeling of lightfulness. I was very light and I was giddy and it felt friggin' good. It felt good. It felt like it felt freeing. Something got lifted off my shoulders. And I know it's, you know, it's like, it was emotional, you know, it was an emotional thing. So, and that was my first experience with alcohol. I don't remember much experimentation after that, but you know, it became more like going to the school dances. Somebody was going to get a buyer to buy some booze. We were going to meet at the park. We were going to drink, and then we were going to go to the dance, have fun, and then go home. You know, stop drinking at a certain point, and try to sober up, and then go home, and you know. And it's all good, right? Well, one time I went and I got sick. I was sick to my stomach and I was throwing up. So, you know, I came home and my mother was like, what? You know, and I lied. I said, I don't know. Something I had for supper didn't agree with me. Maybe because I was dancing all night. And, you know, and I always felt like she believed my stories, you know. She never said anything. She never, like, said, well, were you drink? You know, she never. I was never confronted about my drinking ever. But so not knowing who I was in the world as, you know, a human being, I just always looked to attach myself to something or to somebody. You know, like I had kit a cat when I was a kid. You know, my mother. I was kind of enmeshed with my mom because, you know, I didn't really have anybody like siblings. You know, I had friends, but I was always fearful. I lived in a lot of fear. I was afraid of people, you know, like everything was gonna hurt me. I don't know. It was like everything was gonna hurt me. I don't think a lot of kids feel that way, you know, if they grow up in a semi-normal atmosphere. But I just felt like that. And you know, was that me or was that my environment? You know, maybe both. Who the hell knows? But all I know is I craved admiration and attention and praise when I was a kid, and I didn't get much of it. But when I did get it, I loved it. I can remember feeling I loved it. We used to go visit my aunt every once in a while, and you know, my mother and her would just sit and have coffee, and I'd be in the other room, and they'd be like trying to entertain me with something, and they'd give me something to draw, you know, paper, crayons or whatever to go draw and you know keep myself occupied. And then I would draw a picture and I would bring it back to show them, and my aunt was always like, oh, that's so beautiful, and you know, like just talking it up, you know, like really giving me a lot of praise. And I really liked her, you know, because I didn't get that. I never got that, you know, so I was starving for that. So, you know, as I grew up and I was an adolescent, boys start liking girls, girls start liking boys, you know. So I ended up finding a boyfriend. You know, I had a couple of kissing episodes, but I found a boyfriend in high school and I took him complete hostage. You know, he was my boyfriend. He was going to be my husband. He was going to be my baby's father. I mean, he was going to be my world, you know. Can you imagine, like, being a sophomore in high school and having that all go through your head, right? Like he was gonna save me from all this shit going on in my world. So it never happens. It never happens. I mean, people, places, and things cannot fix what was broken inside of me. None of it can fix it. Alcohol soothed it. So I would chase the alcohol all the time. I would chase it and chase it. You know, and that worked for many, many, many years. I would just chase it. On the outside, I always had responsibilities, and I always seemed to get by, like with jobs, with school. I would manage. You know, sometimes I'd cheat just to you know get by. I learned to be a good cheater, but it caused a lot of stress having to cheat. You know, well, it was better than failing, I guess. You know, I just always felt like I was surviving, and I didn't like that feeling, but I just needed to get through this, and the next thing was going to be better. It was always like something else is going to be better than what was happening in that moment in that part of my life. I did like to have fun, though. I was a kid that liked to have fun. I liked to play. I liked to go out with my friends. I liked partying. I liked music and dance and, going to the beach and going places and having fun with my friends, but I was always insecure and shy. I guess I was shy. I never felt good enough. I have very, very low self-esteem. So, and as time went on, my girlfriends are all like, gonna go to college. They've got boyfriends, fiancés, getting married, having kids. And I'm like, not me. That's not gonna happen to me. I'm not gonna get locked into that, because I never knew what I wanted to be. And nobody was ever good enough to have children with and settle down with. I wasn't good enough to have children with and settle down with, so I don't know. It was when I think back of, who I was and what led me to where I am today. It's just like it just feels sad, but it's just my story, and I can't change it. So, they all moved on in their lives and they were having babies. And I was like, oh, thank God that's not me. I don't want to go through childbirth. And, but I would always get into relationships with men, but I chose the unhealthy ones. I chose the toxic relationships. But these are people that were drinking and partying like me, and chasing the buzz and always wanting to have, a good time and just always getting the booze and then the dry goods. I got into the dry goods. And I always had a good job. I made money. One of my character defects is overly responsible, and like I would never say no. I always said yes to things when I really should have been saying no. But I always overcompensated, and I don't know. I think that, I was just always trying to fit in. I was always trying to fix a feeling or something. I was just a mess. I was just a mess, And nothing was working anymore. And, I was in an abusive relationship, which makes complete sense. I was in therapy for like 6 years when I got sober. And my therapist said, usually you go after people that remind you of your father. And it made sense that I would go after somebody that was incapable of, giving me the things that I wanted or needed and were abusive to me. Of course, the abusive part was when I tried to put my clamps into them and, I just drove them away. So it was a no-win situation. I used to call out sick a lot at work. And my boss would say to me, Joyce, please don't call out sick on Friday. I really need you to do this thing. I worked in a machine shop and I drove a forklift and I said, you can count on me, But Thursday night was payday and right to the bars, bloom, bloom, bloom. All intentions of like stopping at midnight and going home to sleep. But no, I would close the place at 2 o'clock and then, I would just pass out, and at when it was time to get up, forget I was still drunk, and I had a really bad absentee re record. I would never go to work in that condition because I knew better, but I was letting my boss down, and I didn't like that. So eventually, I just said, I got to stop doing this. I knew alcohol was always the problem. I knew that alcohol, if I took alcohol out of my life, I knew that my life would get better. I don't know how I knew it, but I just knew it because I knew every time I drank towards the end of my drinking that I was ending up in situations and places that I didn't want to be. And if I hadn't drank that night, I probably would not have ended up in that situation. And they talk about the threefold disease of alcoholism, physical, mental, and spiritual, and it's like once you put a drink into my system, it's too late. It's already calling for the second, the third, the fourth. And I have completely, absolutely no control over that. That's the physical compulsion for me. And And the mental part is, you know, even worse for me sometimes because I can like believe everything that my mind is telling me, and it's not always true, you know. And I had to like really rewind the tapes and create a new story, you know, create a new way to think, you know. I had to break cycles. I had to break a lot of toxicity. And the only way I was going to be able to learn how to do that was by coming to AA and listen to people share their stories and find out what they did, you know, to internalize new things, you know, new ways of life. You know, I did go through some steps in the program. I'm not a real, I don't like to follow rules of establishments. I don't like to follow traditions of groups, you know, because I like to think outside of the box a little bit. I don't like to be told what to do, because that stuff was just always crammed down my throat. So I resist it when that happens. But, you know, I've learned much later in life how to, you know, get along in groups of people and not always fight all the time. You know, there's a reason for some, what's the word? You know, some organization, I guess, of people. But I don't know. I just don't ever want to drink again. You know, and there's a possibility that I could because I'm an alcoholic, and if I don't, you know, go to meetings and listen to what other people share about what their story is and what's going on in their lives today, you know, how am I gonna learn, you know, how to keep sober? You know, I always learn something. I won't say every time I go to a meeting, but I usually pick something up new, every week if I'm listening, you know, intently. And trying to keep an open mind because I can be very judgmental and I can be very critical, because those are the traits that I have on myself, you know. I came into AA because I had so much shame and I was just shame ridden, you know. So that's not the right word, but whatever. I don't know. I was just a complete mess and I was an imposter. I felt like an imposter. In my family, I felt invisible, and in my life, I felt like an imposter. So I was just really just, you know, walking through life day to day without having any intention and any focus, any goal. You know, it was just kind of a sad existence. So when I finally made it to AA, because I called out sick again, and my friend said, "I know where you can go to learn how to stop drinking." I said, "Where?" And she's like, "You can go to AA." And I knew about AA, but it was like a completely, I don't know, who knows what. You know, I knew that fall down drunks go to AA. I don't know. And I fell down a few times, don't get me wrong. I'd have bruises in the morning. I didn't know how I got them. So I went to the meeting. Not knowing what it was going to be, you know, I went into this church basement. The smoke came down halfway. The lights were bright. It was very loud. And people chitting, chatting. And it sounded like they were having a good, it sounded like a bar room, you know, but with bright lights and coffee. You could smell the coffee. So I went to these meetings and I had so much fear. I was almost shaking with fear, you know, in these meetings. I was so self-centered, and but I would hear some messages, you know. I would hear that it's not my fault that I'm an alcoholic, and I'd be like, "Oh, wow, that takes a lot of pressure off," you know. And I would hear, "You don't have to drink today." And this is a daily program, and you know, just all the slogans, one day at a time, take it easy, you know, you don't have to decide today. Just a lot of little basic things that, you know, that's all that I could take. That's all that I could take in. And I just kept going back to meetings a lot. And eventually, you know, I was picking things up here and there, and I stopped drinking. And things started clearing up. I mean, I started clearing up, like my head was clear. Like I would get up early in the morning. I was going down Lynn Beach where I used to live and play tennis at 6 o'clock in the morning before I would go to work at 7. It was like, I was doing these crazy things that I never would have done if I were drinking, you know? I would go bike riding. I was just doing all kinds of stuff, you know, that I wasn't doing when I was drinking. I was living, you know? And then I did, you know, I did some traveling and that kind of thing. But to be quite honest, it was more like I was fixing all the outside stuff, you know, like bettering myself financially, bettering myself physically, you know, by working out, bettering myself by, you know, eating better, just taking better care of my body. I was still smoking, though. I smoked for like five or six years, and I ended up giving that up. That was harder than stopping drinking, but I did that eventually. But I don't know. Things just started feeling better, and I was doing better. I went to school. I started my own business, you know, because I wanted to be my own boss. I didn't want anybody telling me what to do, you know. And I was successful at it. I didn't make a heaping amount of money, but I was successful, and I did enough that I could buy my own, my first house, you know, under the HUD program. And I did that. And, you know, there were many relationships in and out of a, you know, in AA too, like short-term relationships. And then I was like, all right, I'm done with these relationships because it's just a no-win situation for me. So I got a dog, I got a puppy, and I got a pair of rollerblades. And, I would go down the beach and rollerblade with my puppy, and I ran into this guy from AA, and he's like, "Oh, I love your dog, blah, 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 blah," right? And I'm like, "Yeah." So, you know, and I knew him from the meetings here and there, but he was kind of flirtatious, and you know, I had no intention of going out with another guy. I was just kind of done with men. And it was a long time. And finally, we did end up going out on a date. And it was a slow burn, this relationship. But I mean, we were together for eight and a half years, and then we ended up getting married. And, you know, so I was with him for 30 years, you know, and for me, relationships are like a drug. They're like a drug, you know, and it's hard. Relationships and family are the hardest part for me in Alcoholics Anonymous. It really is, you know. They can take me out. But it ended up that I ended up leaving him, and it was ugly. But I did it for self-preservation, and it was really, really probably the hardest thing I ever did in AA was do that. But I have a high tolerance. I have a high tolerance to a lot of shit, you know, and I have to learn not to have that high tolerance, you know, like I was telling my sponsor today, I don't have to like put my hand on the fire anymore and burn it. Like if my hand just gets warm, I walk away. Before it was like my hand had to be burning on fire for me to walk away, you know, from situations. But now it's like I can see things a little better that now that I have. I've been alone and done a lot of internal work. Let me tell you, get alone and shit's going to happen. You're either going to distract yourself with outside stuff, or if you sit alone with yourself, like I did, and went through every inch of pain that I had to go through, it was the only way I was going to grow. And I'm telling you, this past couple of years, woohoo, they were tough. And love stinks. So, I don't crave admiration anymore. I don't need outside influences to build me up anymore. I don't have to manipulate people anymore, and I can take care of myself to a certain degree. I don't have to be as self-sufficient as I've always been. I have to ask people for help when I don't want to. And I've learned that over the last couple of years. And that's really hard for somebody like me because I'm very hard-headed. I don't know. You know, I grew up in a family of self-righteous people and critical, and I don't talk to any of them anymore. None of them. My brother died. My mother and father died. I took care of my father, who was a narcissist. I took care of him the last couple of years of his life. I think my brother might be a narcissist too. I'm not sure, but you know, who am I to, you know? He's just an evil person. He was always a bully in my life. And when I was taking care of my dad, he used to bully me because he wanted to get all the, I don't know, the gratification for taking care of my father. And I'm like, who gives a shit about who cares who's getting the accolades? I'm doing this because I want to take care of dad and I want the best for him, you know? Like, I can still love him even though he wasn't a good dad, you know? But, and we had so many wonderful talks when I was taking care of him. We became closer, and I was able to ask him a lot of stuff that was very therapeutic. Whether or not he was answering me truthfully, I don't know. But my father was a tough guy. He was a Marine, and he fought in the war, the Iwo Jima War, on the sands of Iwo Jima, and he saw a lot of shit. So he had a lot of post-traumatic stress. Like, I just learned a lot about my father that I didn't know about. And, you know, I don't know. I'm a kind person. I'm an empath. I'm compassionate. You know, I like animals. I'm a vegan. You know, I'm an atheist. You know, I don't always, you know, follow traditional things. I've had to change a lot of concepts of what I've learned as a kid. I've had to rewire it. AA's taught me all of that. You know, women in AA have taught me so much. Men in AA. I didn't like come into AA and have people reach out to me and take me under their wing. I wasn't that person. I was very quiet and reserved. I didn't like to talk. I didn't want you to know who I was. I didn't want you to know the truth. The truth was too painful, you know? It was just too painful to talk and talk about feelings because it made me feel lousy, you know, and I want to feel good. So I don't know. What the hell time did we start? I feel like I'm coming to a close. Alcoholics Anonymous and the people in it, whether they're sober or they're not, helped me understand what it is that I have that I need to put at rest. You know, I can't pick up a drink in safety ever, ever, you know. And I'm in a retirement home now, like retirement community. And people have happy hour, and you don't have to drive, and you can have alcohol delivered. It's perfect setup for somebody like me, but I can't do it. I just have to keep going to meetings and reminding myself, I don't want a drink. There's nothing in a drink. There's nothing left. But I'm in a place where it would be very easy to do it. You know, I'm surrounded by it. But nothing ever, you know, I have to remember what I came from, and I have to remember my mental illness, depression. I don't take anything for it. And you know, there's certain things that I have to do to maintain my sobriety and my mental health. And I don't always do them. And when I don't, I just throw the towel in and I accept it. And I just go with it, you know? And it's gotten so much easier. Like, I don't really give a shit what anybody thinks anymore, you know? Except family. They can wheedle in there once in a while, you know? But I don't know. I'm kind of running out. I'm running out. So I'm going to just hand it back to you, Marky. All right. Love ya.